So, Jake, apparently there are more people able to listen to this than usual. It's a thing I've heard.
I've heard this week we are going all access, so that'll be a treat for all those plebs out there that aren't normally members.
Yeah, and I think the members, rightfully, just like WWE Network customers, are going to get really upset, talk about why are they paying for this. They're going to sign up under different email addresses to get the all-access audio, which isn't even logical in the first place. I mean, I think they're going to get really, really upset and finally just find a way to get it for free. That's how wrestling fans
once
work, right?
Once the hashtag starts, we'll know the revolt is real.
Cancel.net membership. Oh, yes. That'd be a great hashtag, actually. And I would laugh about it. Jason, probably less so. But why would someone cancel .net membership, Jake, when there are so many great benefits to it, including ad-free access to the site, access to .net Weekly, the flagship audio of .net with Jason often just breaking some little first-run news nuggets that you're not going to get anywhere else, a bevy of .net interviews, access to the .net members forum. I mean, hashtag cancel.net membership is really a flawed movement when you look at everything you get.
Yeah, and it's even cheaper than the WWE Network on a monthly basis. Plus, you get all the audio you can shake a stick at in terms of, you know, your commute every day could be filled with all kinds of wrestling news and information if you wanted it to be.
And to us, I don't think we are news or information.
Yeah, we're something, I guess.
Yeah,
we're something.
So that's our little pitch for .net membership, guys. If you want to sign up, go to the ProWrestling.net member page, click the link on the right-hand side of the page, and put in your information. 1 month will get you will cost you $7.50. If you know you want it, want to sign up for 6 months or a year, we offer discounts with those packages. Some fun things to check out there. And now let's get on with the show, because we do have a show today. And last week, we promised we were going to talk about Invasion Attack, the New Japan pay-per-view, and I've got to be honest with you, Jake. Still didn't get around to watching anything but Styles versus Ibushi. So let's keep this conversation very Styles and Ibushi-centric. I've also heard some things about Maria's ass on the show that sound delightful.
They drew a lot of attention to Maria's ass, yes. That was... It was almost like, so it was comical, like it made me laugh the longer it went on, because it became like gratuitous at one point. Like it was just like the camera guy would like focus on, Matt Taven and for like a half a second, and then like they jump back to the guy in the ring who must have been maybe 18 inches from her ass with the camera. They held on there for, you know, way longer than anybody could reasonably expect them to. And they did the same thing, earlier in the show as well with a different, female whose name I can't remember at this point. But, they have a thing, for the juvenile exploitation of women, and Maria definitely gave them an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, that sounds downright uncomfortable. I mean, really, for both the cameraman and her, like, I don't know how I would focus on doing my job at ringside knowing that there was a camera 18 inches from my ass. I would be very uncomfortable. But what did you
think? She seemed abnormally comfortable with it, actually. A lot of smiling. Maybe it was fake. I don't know. It was very strange.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the Styles and Ibushi main event on that show? Because I thought it was a really good match.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not going to rave about it because I didn't think it was better than, you know, either of the two main events on Wrestle Kingdom 9. I mean, yeah. I thought it was, I think Meltzer probably liked it the most out of anybody I saw give it an actual review. But I wasn't as high on it as he was. I thought it was good. I thought they built us some nice drama, and then, you know, the finish kind of felt flat to me. I don't know why exactly, because it was, you know, kind of an interesting reversal into a style
cool.
clash.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and it looked pretty cool, but it was almost like, oh, that's it? Okay. Like, I was expecting more...
What you mean?
Drama heading into the finish than what we got. But I think it was a well-wrestled match. I think Ibushi looked great. I thought Styles, gave a good performance. It just didn't reach the, you know, the level that, you know, Ibushi's match with Nakamura did, or even Okada and Tanahashi at the previous show. So, good, but not great, I guess would be my review.
Yeah, and I would say they're doing a really fun thing with Ibushi, where he's almost there, but not quite. Where, you know, he's getting really close to winning one of those big singles titles in New Japan, and it seems like he just keeps, like, you could structure the narrative in a way where, hey, Ibushi might have won the Intercontinental title if he went for it, but Ibushi decided to go for the world title. You know, he was blinded by his own success and blinded by the biggest prize in New Japan. He decided to go for the IWGP world title and failed going for it. I think they've got huge plans for Ibushi down the line this year. I kind of see him, tell me if I'm wrong here, I kind of see him moving, you know, how New Japan has the big three in Tanahashi, Okada, and Nakamura. I see Ibushi moving in to make that kind of a big four. And I think they're doing a nice job establishing him as a big match competitor, giving him these competitive matches with losses. They're doing a really nice job establishing him that way.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they're getting him there. You know, it'll take time to get him to the level that, you know, the Nakamuras and the Tanahashis and the Okadas of the world are at. I think they've had several years to sort of really establish themselves and have a great run of fantastic matches with various, you know, other people in the company. So, I mean, will he, you know, potentially break through that glass ceiling at some point this year? It's very possible, and it seems like they're targeting that. But, I mean, it's just a matter of time and whether or not he continues to put on the kind of performances that he has recently. I mean, it's amazing the progress he's made since, you know, what he was doing in Noah and other places a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's really fun. I you know, I'm newer to the Japanese wrestling product than you, but it's been really fun just watching him in the last year and seeing him progress through, you know, the juniors and kind of moving up into the heavyweight picture now. Where do you think things are going right now with AJ Styles as world champion? Obviously, we got the attack from Okada afterwards. It kind of mirrored the end of the Invasion Attack show last year with Styles attacking Okada. Now Okada attacks Styles. Do you think Styles makes it through the challenge from Okada?
That's a good question. I'm not sure at this point. I mean, I guess it depends on, you know, how long they plan on having Bullet Club be such a dominant faction. I mean, they traded, you know, they had some wins and they had some losses. I think both tag teams lost on at Invasion Attack. And so, you know, they are taking some championships away from them. But I don't know if that's, you know, just the ebb and flow of stories and, you know, they'll return to such a dominant posture soon or what. But I think, you know, they put some video packages together for Okada for Invasion Attack, and they're doing like a retrospective release kind of DVD for his, you know, his career so far that's coming out shortly. So they may be, you know, prepping him for, you know, a championship run. I'm not entirely sure, but I it's hard to say with, you know, how well Styles has been doing in terms of, you know, his performance and how well they seem to be drawing with Bullet Club, why they would make a sudden change. But it's, you know, I'm leaning that he'll make it through, but I just don't know.
Yeah, I think he makes it through, but it's hard to say when you do have Styles and Okada and, you know, hey, they're not exactly interested in having Okada take a ton of losses. I guess I would rather see Okada not go for that world title until the Tokyo Dome next year and, you know, see him kind of win G1 again and have to go on that journey again, because I thought the storytelling that they did at the Tokyo Dome this year was so strong with Okada really suffering from the agony of defeat. I found that to be a really impactful image, and to me that's something that sets up storytelling a year from now. It's It really could be something special, but I also get, hey, maybe they want to tell that story earlier. That's not the worst thing, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't have really high expectations for his match at Invasion Attack. I think he was with Bad Luck. Is it Fale or Fale? I can't remember exactly how they pronounce his name, but But I was really impressed with what he got out of him. I mean, you know, it's Okada just impresses me on so many levels in terms of, you know, what he's able to do in the ring. And, you know, psychologically, it seems like, you know, I've seen some, you know, some captions of English translations of some of his promos. And he does seem to have a character that's connecting with people. So I could see them moving the title soon, but I think I'd like your approach better if they spent the next 8 months really telling the story of him sort of rebuilding himself after losing at the last Dome show and bringing himself back to that level and winning next time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a sucker for that kind of parallel storytelling. I would actually recommend doing a similar thing with Roman Reigns this year in WWE, kind of. And I know someone just, like, threw their phone on the ground because they're angry at me for suggesting Reigns win the Rumble again. But I would do something very similar with him in a year with it, you know, him kind of getting that title shot. It'd be really funny, actually, if Roman Reigns did become a heel in between now and then for him to convince whoever won Money in the Bank, no, you need to cash in now at some point before WrestleMania. Like, there would be some weird comedy there that I think would be golden, of Reigns just being super paranoid that someone's going to cash in during his match again. A lot like Kofi Kingston for the rest of his career, whenever he steps into the Elimination Chamber, has to look both ways and make sure Edge isn't going to come and attack him again. That's,
head on a swivel.
Yeah. That was great, by the way, when Edge did that. That was such...
It was.
What was that? No Way Out 2009? I think it was the first show with the two Elimination Chambers. First or second show with them. With, you know, the two matches, and Edge lost in the first 5 minutes of one and snuck into the other. Brilliant. God.
Perfect.
Edge is so good. Edge was great. Anyways, speaking of wrestlers with neck problems, hey, how's that for a... quick shift.
Nice transition.
Yeah.
Perfect.
With Daniel Bryan pulled off of the rest of the European tour, sent home to be evaluated medically. I've been kind of torn on how to react to this news, because on the one hand, I don't want to overreact and say, oh my God, Daniel Bryan's career is over. He needs to be done. This is it. Oh, well, everyone knew he couldn't hold up. I don't want to get into that. At the same time, I think that it is a really, there is some really serious concern for Bryan within the wrestling industry, where you're seeing he comes back from a neck issue, you know, has good competitive, hard-hitting matches, but doesn't change his style, and now it seems like that issue may be flaring up again, and you, I know, I really do worry about it, and I worry if, he's making the best choices for his future. Not, you know, he's likely making the best choices for his career, but I wonder if he's making the best choices for his future as he, you know, as he continues to wrestle at the level that he does.
It's hard to say. You know, we don't know, you know, what goes on in his, you know, personal life or his conversations with his doctors. I mean, I know
there are some of what goes on in his personal life. I am aware that he uses the pull-out method.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that is just total fabrication or not. I mean, I know that there are characters that they play on Total Divas, just like there are on WWE TV. And I know the reality show characters clearly borrow from their real personalities, but we don't know how much of that is actually true or not. So I can believe the pull-out method thing, but, you know, I don't think Bryan is silly enough that he would avoid, you know, seeing regular doctors, you know, that
yes.
kind of thing. Like, they seem to portray him as being, like, dedicated to natural medicine to the point where he wasn't listening to, you know, to regular doctors. I just don't know if that's true. But I'm kind of, you know, tentatively, I won't say optimistic, but, you know, they pulled him from the tour to go get evaluated. I know, you know, when he was out, he's had a couple of treatments with a naturopath that did, you know, some specialized muscle activation techniques that supposedly helped him regain some strength and get back into the gym and get ready for a return. And, you know, at the time, even when he came back, he was quoted in several interviews saying that, you know, it's probably something that he'll have to go back and do from time to time, because he didn't have the second surgery that was recommended to him, you know, by by other doctors, and he decided to go this route. And so, you know, maybe it's just something where he needs to go back in for treatment, and, you know, it's something that he'll have to do more regularly than he thought. Because he said the first time they did it, it helped for like 2 weeks, and then the pain came, or the numbness and stuff came back. And then the second time he went and did it, it lasted for months until he, you know, he came back. And now he's, you know, clearly starting to have some issues return. So, you know, it might be that he just needs to go back and do this more regularly than he thought, because it's not the kind of structural neck issue that somebody like Edge or Steve Austin or Kurt Angle or Lita or some of them have, where they had fusions done. He had a nerve relocated, I believe, in his elbow, and they were recommending, you know, some additional surgery to, you know, to kind of alleviate some of the pressure on that nerve. So it's not the kind of issue where, you know, all of a sudden he's just going to get the news that he has to retire. I think it's something that he's got to decide whether he wants to, you know, continue to go down the path that he's on, where he's getting these, you know, these nerve and muscle, must be some kind of massage technique or something along those lines, to try to buy him some more time before he needs surgery, or if he wants to just go in and have that second surgery done and sit out for another 6 or however many months he'd need to be gone. You know, if I could avoid surgery, I would too, because I know, you know, when they were first talking about him kind of choosing one of these paths, they said the surgery may or may not actually fix the problem permanently. So I can see why he went down the path that he did.
I can too, especially when you know, given how long it took them to make the decision about the surgery. And, you know, Brian, he's not, you know, the guy that's all about business and he wants to make all the money. But he's a businessman, and I'm sure he saw, I want to be back for WrestleMania. I just barely started making great money here. I want to get, you know, I want that WrestleMania check. I'm sure he saw this as a way that he could be, and that he, a way that he could get back and get involved pretty quick. I think my concern, and this is also informed by, I got an early copy of his book, and I read it in like less than a day. It's a really quick read. I'm not allowed to say a ton about it, but it's worth picking up. It's also kind of informed by some of what he says in his book about fighting through all the injuries that he fought through on the indie scene, which he was well known for. You know, he went into a match with a detached retina, the championship match with Kenta in Manhattan Center when his shoulder was dislocated, all of that. You get into Brian having all of these hard-hitting matches with all of these injuries, and you wonder how much damage was done and how much he can hold up even to a WWE regular schedule. Part of me wants to see Brian almost become kind of, and I don't think WWE views him at this level, which is sad because he could be, but almost become a part-time attraction in WWE. He's not going to wrestle every house show. He's not going to wrestle every night, but we're going to break him out on big shows, and he's going to be put in main spots and, you know, find a way to keep him involved in stories without having him doing everything every week. Because, I mean, look at that match he had with Sheamus on SmackDown. He was out, I think, the, you know, 2 days after WrestleMania. So 2 days after being in that ladder match at WrestleMania, he had this insane match with Sheamus on SmackDown that was hard-hitting, it was brutal, it was just, you know, I think one of the stiffer matches this side of Brock Lesnar you're going to see. Why are you doing that on SmackDown? Why? And, you know, Brian,
and Luke Harper dropped him on his head a couple of times.
Yeah.
I mean, leading up to WrestleMania, you know, and he did some radio where he said that people weren't happy with him, and he said, well, I'm just testing my neck. And I was just like, okay, buddy, whatever you say.
You don't need to test your neck. Your neck is fine. Well, not fine, but you shouldn't be testing it. I'm really kind of nervous about what he ends up doing. And I hope, I'm optimistic about WWE's position, at least, and that they did send him home from the tour. They did protect him for the part of the tour that he was on. And it does seem like they are at least conscious of it, and they're not letting him further injure himself even when he wants to, because his defense of some of it was, well, I need to do these things. Wrestling is my art. This is my artistic outlet. And if I can't be the artist I want to be, There's a certain point where Daniel Bryan has to choose between not wrestling or being the artist he wants to be, right? Like, one thing I've heard said about Bryan, and people have said it almost negatively, is WWE's going to turn him into, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan in a few years, and he's just going to come out, say yes, hit a move, and leave. And I'm like, God, there are much worse things you could be in your career than be the old guy that comes out that everyone loves, gets a big nostalgia pop, and people chant for. That doesn't suck. Like, that is not a bad thing to be, and I don't know if that's exactly what Bryan, just as a person, wants to be, if that's how he saw his wrestling career going. But I wouldn't be, as a fan of his, I wouldn't be upset if he kept getting paydays because people loved to yes, and he was able to do a few moves. Like, that's not terrible to me. And I don't think that would be terrible to a lot of fans of his. I think worse would be seeing Bryan just completely break down and end up in really, really bad shape because he continued to aggravate problems. And I sincerely hope WWE isn't going to let him go down that road.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems like he would let himself go down that road if they would too. So, you know, hopefully they find a way to work in, you know, some more of this treatment into his schedule and maybe give him some house shows off. I mean, just, you know, use him at a pace that he seems like he can handle, you know, and pick his spots a little bit better. You know, he shouldn't be having a ladder match at WrestleMania and taking, you know, some of the bumps that he did there and then, you know, going out on Monday and having a match and then having another one on Tuesday with Sheamus. And I think Sheamus caught a bit of grief for that, too. I don't know if it was backstage, but it was certainly out on the web that people were kind of unhappy that he didn't do more to protect Bryan in that match. And, you know, I think, you know, he's just going to do a better job of drawing the line and hopefully, you know, re-aggravating this injury like he has is a wake-up call to him that, you know, even though he might not be 100% of the artist that he wants to be, you know, maybe 80% for 5 more years would be a better choice. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, take it down a notch or two and still be able to wrestle. There's also just the idea, you know, Bryan talked a lot about, in his book, about what it's like to go out in front of indie crowds and how high the expectations are on the indies. And it's clear in his book, he views himself very much as an independent wrestler still, which is kind of cool, and I know longtime fans of his will appreciate. But what it's like to go out on the indies and, you know, how high expectations were out there, especially for him. You know, because you see Bryan Danielson's coming to your show and you go, oh, it's, you know, somebody's going to get their head kicked in. Like, that's just what he did. And I look at what he does in WWE and I go, you don't need to wrestle, you know, you don't need to break out all of that. Yes, you're smaller. Yes, I get that you feel like you need to wrestle a high impact style, but you don't need to kill yourself all the time. And especially, I kind of understood it when he was new and starting to get over, but Bryan is very over at this point. Bryan can coast a little bit. And I normally, you know, I'm not one that defends wrestlers not working super hard, but in this instance, I think he could, and I think there are reasons to coast a little bit. I feel similarly sometimes about John Cena, who also is putting together an insane, you know, a formulaic but really good body of work with these U.S. title open challenges right now. You know, it's like, you can do a little less, John. I know you love your new springboard stunner toy, but still, I just hope with Daniel Bryan that whatever happens, he ends up coming out of the other side of wrestling healthy and in good shape and not in a ton of pain. I think that is my main concern, is that he's fine at the end of wrestling, whether he keeps wrestling or, you know, Jake, if Daniel Bryan, if his career ended, if this was kind of the end of the road, it's really hard to ask for a better big moment to go out on than what he had at last year's WrestleMania. What he'll be remembered for, he did it, and he made it further than anyone thought he would. That's a hell of an accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly a Hall of Famer. I mean, any Grand Slam champion, you know, headlined WrestleMania, you know, he had a fantastic work rate throughout his entire career. I mean, there's few guys that can claim to do what he has done in WWE, given, you know, where he started and where he ended up. I mean, not too many wrestlers have, you know, the kind of organic connection with the crowd that he developed and nurtured, and what happened, you know, to end WrestleMania 30 was mostly just a testament to how strong that connection was. So he had a fantastic career, and if, you know, he finds out that, you know, things just aren't going to heal up the way that he expected, and he needs to take, you know, either an extended period of time off, you know, or, you know, end his career, whatever needs to happen for him to live the rest of his life healthy. I think he's got to go down that road. I mean, I don't know what there is for him after wrestling. It certainly seems like that it would be a complete wasted opportunity for WWE to let him go away, you know, and then do, you know, hydroponic farming or whatever Brian is interested in, you know, but, you know, if it is what it is, then I think he can walk away with his head held high for sure.
WWE loves to put guys in kind of that ambassador role. How great would Daniel Bryan be at that? Like, Daniel Bryan on the local news, you know, or, you know, Daniel Bryan doing media. Yes, he's a little smaller than the guys they usually like to push, obviously, but he is insanely nice. Like, and I think Daniel Bryan, you know, I think one of the reasons I like him as much as I do, Daniel Bryan kind of relates to a younger generation of fans in an interesting way. I mean, it's not many wrestlers who are, you know, who come out open and are openly very socially conscious. I mean, Bryan has kind of said for a long time he wants to retire and live in a completely, like, self-sustainable bubble, basically, where he's farming, you know, where he's getting all of his food from his own farm, where he's, you know, well water, he's irrigate, you know, his irrigation setup, feeds, all of that. Like, he wants this insanely cool life for himself with very, very neat housing. And I kind of wonder how I wonder just looking at, you know, his book and what we know about him, if he doesn't just want to disappear off the face of the earth after wrestling and be like, yeah, I'm just a guy now, just a guy with a lot of money and a kick-ass home.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that if that's what he wants. I mean, it's certainly, you know, a path that is open to him. I just don't know how long, you know, just from my own personal perspective, I think that would be awesome for like a year or two.
And then you'd get real bored.
You'd get real bored. Yeah, the itch would be, I got to go do something. And so I hope they find, you know, something for him to do, whether it's, you know, being an agent or a talent scout or a trainer or a broadcaster or, you know, a GM or whatever the hell they find for Bryan to do. I think people will follow him and his fans will stay with him. So if it comes down to his active career has to wind down, or if he has to sit out for a while he completely heals, it, they should find another role for him, because it's clear that he's over, fans love him, and whatever he does, people will be there for him.
If WWE was presented, you know, hey, you know, if Bryan was told, you're not going to make it much worse by wrestling on it, you can get a little more, but then you need to get surgery, and we don't recommend you wrestle after your surgery. Like, if WWE was basically given, given like the card, you get one more match with Daniel Bryan, and they decided, say, to put it on WrestleMania. Like, we want to make it a big deal. We're going to use Daniel Bryan's drawing power to try and get more people to travel to Dallas to see his last match. Who would you put him against on, you know, that is currently under WWE contract? Like, who would you do, like, the end of Daniel Bryan with?
That's such an interesting question, because it's, you know, it's like, well, do you go with somebody else that's at the end of their run and kind of make it a career versus career match? Or
like,
do you...
Sting.
Sting, or
the
you know, the
match
under...
ever.
That would be weird. I mean, or you have The Undertaker, or even Kane, somebody who he has a lot of history with. You know, there's always options like that if they want to do something really sentimental, you know, or if you just want to have him go out and just try to kill it one last time and get somebody over in the process, you can have him, you know, go out there and, you know, have a match with Kenta or Hideo Itami and, you know, try to establish somebody like that or Cesaro or, you know, somebody who we've had fantastic matches with already. I mean, you know, personally, I think they should just grant his wish and pay Nakamura for a night and have him come in at WrestleMania and just let it happen. Like,
oh,
I think those two would have. And people would be like, oh, are you serious? This is actually real? Like, people would freak the hell out. So I think it would be amazing.
Could you imagine, like, you'd get the fans there that knew, but Nakamura starts making his entrance, and how many people would freak out, like, as they see this wrestler for the first time and are just like, holy shit,
what
the coolest person I've ever seen. I want to be on him. Like,
oh, man.
Yeah.
You would probably fill the Texas Stadium with, like, 40% Japanese people at that point. I mean, people would fly over here for that.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of that Texas Stadium, I got the most depressing news this week. There's a really cool gig that I will likely end up doing next spring. And I was talking with someone about the dates for it. We're chatting. And then they mentioned that I would be in a all-day tech rehearsal WrestleMania Sunday next year, and I almost started crying because it's like I can't say no to the gig, but I also hate being a responsible adult. So, yeah, sad.
Yes,
times. There go my WrestleMania dreams.
Conspires against you sometimes.
Yeah, this must be how Steve Austin felt when he found out he couldn't be in at WrestleMania in the year 2000. Just heartbroken. Yeah, so in that scenario for me, I mean, I would probably look at the NXT guys, just because when you think about Bryan and probably the guys he would want to work with, I would think Sami Zayn, Finn Balor, and Hideo Itami are at the top of his list. And, you know, if you get one more match, why not use it to get one of them over in their first big WrestleMania match? And and then it's just who's the most ready and who makes the most story sense out of those three to do that with. And, I mean, any one of those matches would be insanely cool. So, yeah, let's move on from Bryan for a little bit. Obviously, we're going to keep an eye on that story. He's a wrestler that we both are sort of attached to. Let's talk about Neville and Dolph Ziggler's match on Raw. You brought up, before we started talking, an interesting point that Steve Austin made about the match, and I'm interested to have you repeat that and kind of expound on that.
Oh, yeah. On my way into work today, I was listening to Steve Austin's Unleashed podcast for this week, and one of the things he brought up was Neville and Dolph Ziggler's match and how the flow of it didn't make a ton of sense for him. He also, you know, kind of brought up Dolph Ziggler's selling and how it kind of becomes sort of comical at times, how over the top it is. But his big bone to pick with the match was that there was like the, you know, how Dolph Ziggler does that, that sort of jumping, you know, momentum swing DDT that he, you know, he seems to pull off at least once a match where he jumps up and then he has this big swinging motion that drives somebody's head into the mat. And they did that before the first commercial break, and, you know, it led to a near fall. But then, you know, after the break, Neville never actually sold it again. So Austin was pointing out that the logic of the match didn't make a ton of sense to him. You know, you had that huge DDT that led to a two count. And then, you know, the finish of the match was Dolph Ziggler's what the heck do you call that finisher again? Why am I drawing a blank
the
on
zigzag?
That all of a sudden? The zigzag, excuse me. Man, long day. But
you see, first he zigs, then he zags.
Yeah, yeah. But essentially it's like, you know, just a pancake flat back bump. And, you know, that's the finish when, you know, a couple of minutes earlier, 3 minutes into the match, you had this thunderous DDT that led to a two count that he never actually sold again. So Austin was sort of upset at the flow of the match, thought it didn't make a whole lot of sense. He praised both Ziggler and Neville, you know, for being, you know, just freakish athletes and having a lot of potential, but he just kind of, he knocked him for not really thinking through when they put together the match, how that was going to look and how it was kind of, out of place for somebody to take a DDT like that and then never actually sell the effects of it at any point in the match.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a huge thing. Big DDTs have been like a weekly occurrence on Raw lately, because you had a John Cena, the one in the John Cena and Stardust match, too, that was just brutal looking. I mean, Cena braced himself the right way on his head, but, you know, he got dropped on his head in a really good spot, if it didn't hurt. I also wondered about this match, if maybe it was the right time to give Neville a win. I know, you know, last week I defended I defended Neville losing against Seth Rollins. I thought that was a fine use of both him and Rollins, and Neville had a good showing. With Dolph Ziggler, and Jason made this point too, they don't care as much about Dolph Ziggler. Ziggler is not super important, and really giving Neville a win in his home country against Ziggler could be a signature win for him. It could be something that boosts Neville as he goes on, and I wonder why give Ziggler that win when you can give it to Neville?
I guess my opinion on it was perhaps they just saw that they had an upcoming pay-per-view match for Ziggler. They didn't want to send him into that match against Sheamus, who, I mean, I guess would have to be the favorite there, because Ziggler, of course, is playing the underdog role, you know, in the feud. So maybe they just didn't want to have him take a loss and then have Sheamus come out afterwards and punk him out. And, you know, maybe they thought they'd be taking too much off of him in that respect. But, I don't know why, you know, you couldn't have Sheamus just cost Ziggler the match then, if that was the case. I mean, why have a clean finish? It seemed like it was a strange way to go about it, especially when, you know, they had two guys in the ring that they seemingly would want to protect, and, you know, having them put on a good 10-minute match and then have, you know, Sheamus interfere, at least it would feel logical that he would be there to cost Ziggler a win, and then they could, you know, quickly get Neville out of there so Sheamus could continue his beatdown. I mean, they booked themselves into a weird corner by having a clean finish there for seemingly no reason. I mean, we see so many, you know, DQs
and
countouts and everything
clean
else.
Finishes.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have it's a weird place to have one, considering how often they seemingly have DQs for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, like every Kane match. I really like the work Neville's doing, though. I think they are using him the right way. Obviously, I mean, you know, there were the Mighty Mouse rumors that got overreacted to, and I always just said, oh, no, they want to turn the little guy who can fly into a superhero. That sounds terrible. Because, you know, Mighty Mouse is a copyrighted character that they were never going to call him. And his character right now is a little guy who can fly who is a superhero. And I guess I really like the presentation of it thus far. Aside, you know, loss to Ziggler aside, I think they're doing a really nice job making him special. He adds a ton of athleticism to Raw. I mean, you know, in the same way kind of the Cruiserweights did to Nitro, you're seeing some really cool stuff on Raw, and I think his matches are going to be can't miss just because he's, hey, guess what? 450 off the barricade. Like, I've never even seen that before. It was nuts. And I think he's going to continue to do things like that. I'm interested to see how
if you go online and you just look up different stuff that he was doing on the indies.
Oh, it's insane.
Like, he'll do, like, standing red arrows and stuff. Like, it's just insane what he's able to pull off athletically. So, I mean, I don't know, for safety reasons, if they'll let him do some of the crazier stuff, but he is as athletic or more athletic than anybody on the roster right now.
Yeah, and it's going to be really fun. I wonder what WWE does with him when he has to talk. And that's my only concern with him going forward is what happens when he has to open his mouth. Because I'm trying to think of who to compare it to who feels like a superhero right up until they talk and you go, that's it? And I worry that he loses some of his mystique when he has to open his mouth. And, you know, kind of like we were worried about with Sting coming to WWE at first. It's like, he's not that great of a, you know, he's not that great of a WWE-level promo. And Neville has some deficiencies there. He improved leaps and bounds, really high leaps, because he's Neville. Gravity, I mean, it's like it didn't even remember him. But he improved a ton, promo-wise, on NXT. But he was still an okay promo in NXT. And you move okay in NXT up to the main roster, where they do have good talkers. Where, you know, the issue isn't a lack of good promos on the main roster, because there are some really good ones. And then you add in just some of the confusion in promos that comes with the main roster. Like, here's 3 pages of dialogue, memorize it. We just changed it, memorize it again. You know, and all of that. And you kind of wonder if Neville, if he's going to have a fair shake once he gets into that portion of things. You also have to, I mean, I think one of the big things with Neville at a certain point is he's a superhero without a supervillain. He needs a suit, you know, he needs someone who is his villain, you know. He needs the Lex Luthor to his Superman. He needs the, you know, the Joker to his Batman. He needs someone that he is fighting against somehow. And I'm interested to see how they build all of that up for Neville as we kind of go forward with his push.
Well, they already had Stardust dressed up as Mr. Sinister for a couple of days, so I think they could go that route if they need to.
Yeah, I've heard things about a Stardust and Neville program. That's not out of the question. Let's move on real quick to kind of our final topic today. Kane on Raw. A lot of people are praising the performance of Kane, and I'm going to be honest, Jake, I don't get it. I don't get turning Kane babyface. I don't get – I guess what I don't get is doing – anything with Kane, because I look at it and I go, but he's Kane. Like, he's still just Kane. And I don't really want to see Kane involved with my main eventers. And when you've got so many talented guys on the roster who should be in line before him, including like a freaking Luke Harper.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this is heading to like a title versus career match or something. Like, I'm just wondering if this is like Kane's last hurrah. And I don't know if that's the case or not, but I could see, you know, Kane, you know, doing the whole full on turn thing, putting the mask back on, you know, turning on the authority, becoming a thorn in their side, and then them, you know, saying, okay, Kane, you can have a title match at one of these, you know, pay-per-views between now and SummerSlam, and having him, you know, put his career on the line, and you know, having this be his ride off into the sunset. Because I know, you know, he's getting to the point in his career where he's probably getting close to having those, you know, thoughts about retiring. I mean, I know some people think he's got a couple of years left, but I don't really see it from a character standpoint. So, you know, maybe he will move to something behind the scenes. I don't know, but I could see them, you know, thinking, well, let's get one last run out of Kane and have it be, you know, something where he can go out as a fan favorite and be done. But I don't know if that's the case or not. It's just something that entered my mind on Monday when I saw that he was actually getting, you know, a pretty favorable reaction for, you know, for his performances. You know, people seem to like Kane when he has, you know, something interesting to bite into from a character standpoint. And this is the most interesting thing that they've done with him in months, and possibly, you know, well over a year. So I didn't think it was like blow my doors off fantastic what happened on Monday, but at least I thought, you know, from a performance standpoint, Kane and especially Rollins delivered and at least worked, you know, to tell the story that they had to tell for that particular show.
I think they delivered. I guess I just, like I said, it's, and maybe I'm being a stereotype right now when I just go, I don't like it because it's Kane being pushed above blank and you could put anyone there. I just don't get slotting Kane in a higher than mid-card role at all. And so that does bother me. If I take it and look at the individual performances, he did a great job. He did a really good job there. And like you said, if it builds to a title versus career match, I could actually see there being a ton of drama to that. And I would be a little more okay with it being kind of Kane's one last hurrah, Kane's like last big moment. But I don't know. I've felt that way about Kane before. Like, you know, go to Kane getting the world title in 2010, and it's like, oh, well, if this is Kane's, you know, last big run, if this is his last time in the main event, it's fine. And it wasn't. And you got more and more Kane, and I don't know. Quick Kane though, yeah. While we were talking about Daniel Bryan earlier too. You remember how angry we got when Team Hell No got picked over Team Friendship?
Yes, I think we were pretty angry about that for no real reason.
No, I'm still angry. They wanted to be Team Friendship as well, so I feel a little vindicated. There were going to be T-shirts with rainbows. Think about what the world was deprived of.
That might be one of the few WWE T-shirts I might just buy just to have one.
Yeah, right? Like drawings of Daniel Bryan and Kane with like rainbows and with rainbows and unicorns riding through. Like, yay!
Amazing.
It would have been wonderful. That's just another little nugget from Daniel Bryan's book that, I mean, is good. I'm okay with Kane if it is that kind of scenario. If it's just we're going to main event three network specials in a row with Kane kind of situation, I plan to be pretty upset about it because, again, it's Kane. And he's a really cool, good performer. He has a long legacy. He has been great for years, but it's not time for Kane anymore.
Yeah. I think he's just somebody that they're like, well, they did the same thing with Daniel Bryan part of the reason that I hated that program was just because they tried to do stupid horror movie Kane. And that is something that nobody likes anymore because they just can't do it well enough. They write it like it's a joke, and it is a joke. But at least at this point, you know, with the way he is now, he's somebody that they can safely put Rollins over clean. Kane would have no trouble putting him over, and they would get a decent match out of it. I just think they're looking for opponents that Rollins can beat clean and gain some credibility before, you know, they feed him back to Lesnar or whoever he's going to end up losing the championship to at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I hope. Do you think Seth loses the championship at SummerSlam? Do you think that's a thing?
I don't know if it's a thing necessarily. I mean, it probably just depends on, what they have booked for WrestleMania. I'm assuming, if Lesnar ends up, with The Rock, that he won't need the championship. If they have plans to put him back against Roman Reigns or something, and to have that, have that be a sequel to their first match because it didn't end the right, the way with a clean finish, that they would probably end up having Lesnar holding the championship heading into WrestleMania. But, it really depends on how well Seth Rollins performs and how he draws as a champion. I mean, the past couple of weeks aren't really much of a sample size, but it seems like WWE's ratings are returning to earth, and I think network subscription numbers will probably play a big part in their direction for business, too.
Yeah, I would say so. I'm kind of interested, actually, to see where Lesnar fits in at next year's WrestleMania, because there are a lot of places that Brock could go. Kind of hope he's up against this young upstart named Bork Laser. He can smash. Oh. Who would win in a Bork versus Bork matchup? The fans.
Well, the fans, yeah. Of course. Yeah, I don't know where he ends up, but I'm just excited to see where he plugs in or how they get him back on television with the suspension. And I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions there. And, they're going to have, if you believe a lot of the rumors, they're going to have a pretty loaded WrestleMania. So I don't think they'll have any problem selling out the big stadium.
Let's hope not. And I will sadly have to watch it. I won't even get to watch it live. Sorry. I'm going to be sad about this for basically the next year.
It's a long time until that happens. Maybe schedules will change. You never know. Don't give up hope quite yet.
Thank you, Jake, for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on the All Access side. Again, website is prowrestling.net. Check out the membership option. Link on the right-hand side of the page. Spend your money on quality wrestling coverage. Until next week, Jake will be moving, so I will have a surprise mystery guest, whoever I can find, and I'm going to come back and be chatting about my trip to the temple. I'm going to the Lucha Underground show on Sunday, so as much as I'm allowed to talk about the temple, I plan to talk about the temple and yeah, it should be a fun time there. Jake, good luck with the move. Next time we talk, you'll be in Austin, Texas. I hope you do something cool and hipstery to honor me there.
I will have to drink, like, some wide variety of local beer for you.
Oh, I love – that's a great idea. Or maybe go to a really pretentious coffee place. Yeah, that's what I'm about.
I'll have to take a picture in front of the most pretentious coffee place in Austin and send it to you.
I wonder if there's a top 10 list of the most pretentious coffee places in Austin. Like,
there's got to be a list out there. Somebody on Yelp probably keeps track of this.
Yeah. That would be great. I mean, I really don't even go to coffee shops if there's not at least a little bit of pretension about them. Thank you, Jake. Good luck with the move. Can't wait to talk about it and talk about your new digs once you get settled in. I guess we'll talk in a couple weeks.
Yeah, enjoy the guest stars of this show, and I'm sure they'll have a lot of interesting things to say.
I hope so. That would suck if they didn't. Thanks for listening, everyone.